Penguin Random House Audio presents How to Make an Apple Pie from Scratch, in search of the recipe for our universe from the origins of atoms to the Big Bang. This is the author, Harry Cliff.
For Vicky and Robert, thank you. If you wish to make an apple pie from scratch, you must first invent the universe. Carl Sagan. Prologue. On a frosty morning in March 2010, I pulled up outside a fenced compound on the outskirts of the French commune of Ferney-Voltaire. A sign bolted to the steel security gates announced, CERN Site 8, Access réservé aux personnes autorisées. Leaning awkwardly across to reach through the passenger window of my right-hand drive car, I swiped my security badge against the reader. The gates remained closed. Had my access request not gone through? Noticing a queue of cars beginning to form behind me, I gave the reader a series of increasingly anxious swipes. Nothing. I was just about to get out to attempt to negotiate with the security guard in my halting high school French when, to my relief, the gates began to creak open. I parked behind the main experimental hall, facing the chain-link fence that marks the boundary of Geneva Airport's runway. Outside, my breath misted in the cold air, which carried an now-familiar sickly sweet smell from a perfume factory in the nearby Swiss town of Meyrin. Pushing my hands into my coat pockets, I made for the prosaically named Building 3894, a single-story porter cabin used for the early morning run meetings. Inside, most of the participants were already crowded around the long table, waiting for the meeting to start. Some chatted with their neighbours in English, French, German, Italian. Others sipped coffees or sat hunched over laptops. I took my seat a row back from the table itself, hoping that I wouldn't be called upon. 100 metres beneath our feet, in a concrete tunnel so long it could encircle a city, the largest and most powerful machine ever built was being coaxed into life, the Large Hadron Collider, or LHC. In just a few days, this ring-shaped particle accelerator would slam subatomic particles into one another with such incredible violence that it would briefly recreate conditions that existed during the first instant after the Big Bang. These tiny cataclysms would be recorded by 4 giant particle detectors housed in cathedral-sized underground caverns spaced several kilometres apart around the LHC ring. One of these detectors was directly below us, the Large Hadron Collider Beauty Experiment, or LHCB. 6,000 tonnes of steel, iron, aluminium, silicon and fibre-optic cables poised like a sprinter in the blocks, waiting for its moment to arrive. It had been a long wait. Some of my colleagues had spent their entire careers building towards this moment. 20 years of planning, funding bids, scrupulous design, testing and engineering had resulted in one of the most advanced particle detectors ever built. In the next few days, all that work would finally be put to the test, as engineers on the LHC prepared to collide particles inside the detector for the very first time. I was 24 years old, a second-year PhD student having arrived in Geneva for the first of 2 3-month stints a few weeks earlier. My new home was CERN, the European Organisation for Nuclear Research, the largest and most advanced particle physics lab in the world. Over the past few weeks, I'd slowly learned to find my way around the labyrinth of office buildings, workshops and laboratories that make up the sprawling CERN site, battled through February snowstorms, and discovered that flushing your toilet after 10 p.m. in Switzerland will get you a stern telling off from your neighbours. I was also getting to grips with my new duties on LHCB, including responsibility for one of its numerous subsystems, each of which would have to function flawlessly. If one failed, then the long-awaited data could end up being unusable. I had first come face-to-face with LHCB 1.5 years earlier. My supervisor, Uli, a German postdoctoral researcher who was based at CERN full-time, had guided me through the complex set of procedures required to access the detector. Donning a badge that would monitor my radiation exposure during my trip below ground, I first had to persuade a rather temperamental iris scanner to let me through a set of bright green airlock-style security doors. Then a small metal lift shuddered its way 105 metres beneath the earth, down into what is rather ominously known as the pit. The doors opened on a strange subterranean world of whirring machinery, metal gantries painted in primary colours, and concrete tunnels threaded with thousands of metres of cables and ducts. Another set of security doors, this time bright yellow and emblazoned with radiation warning signs, and then a narrow passage snaking its way through a 12-meter-thick shield wall, before abruptly opening into a soaring concrete cavern. The first thing that strikes you is its sheer size. LHCB is big, 10 meters high and 21 meters long, spanning the entire width of the cavern. At first glance, it can be hard to figure out what you're looking at. The view is dominated by staircases, steel platforms and scaffolding, painted in green and yellow, that support and allow access to the sensitive elements of the detector, which are mostly hidden from view. Crisscrossing the walls of the cavern are reams of cables taking power to the detector and carrying away a torrent of data produced by millions of tiny precision-engineered sensors. LHCB is capable of measuring the paths of thousands of individual subatomic particles as they tear out from the collisions at a whisker below the speed of light, with a precision of a few thousandths of a millimeter. And it can do this a million times every second. But perhaps the most remarkable thing about LHCB is the way it was built. Like all four of the large LHC experiments, it's a modern-day Tower of Babel, with each component designed and assembled by an international collaboration of physicists and engineers based at dozens of universities spread across the globe, from Rio de Janeiro to Novosibirsk. Brought together in this giant hole in the ground just outside Geneva, they form a single, mind-meltingly complex instrument. The fact that any of this works at all still seems kind of miraculous to me. My colleagues in Cambridge have spent the last decade designing, building and testing the electronics that would read out data from the subdetector, whose job it is to tell different types of particles from one another. My small part in this was to make sure that the software used to control and monitor the electronics worked without crashing or otherwise causing problems when the moment came. I was a small cog in a huge machine, but still, I was acutely aware that two decades of effort by hundreds of physicists from 70 countries and an investment of 65 million euros from more than a dozen national funding agencies depended on me doing my small job properly. I did not want to be the person who fucked up at the last minute. The chatter in the room ceased abruptly as the run chief called the meeting to order. I glanced around the room at my colleagues, many of whom looked as though they hadn't slept much in the past few days, aware that this was the beginning of the most important phase of my career so far. The first item was a report detailing overnight work on the LHC, which people at CERN colloquially refer to as the machine. It was this machine that we were now all waiting for. More than three decades in the making, the LHC is a scientific project on an unprecedented scale. Almost everything about it is extreme. It's the largest scientific instrument ever built, by some measures the largest machine ever built. 27 kilometers in circumference, so large that it crosses the border between France and Switzerland four times. There are actually flags marking the border painted on the tunnel walls. The beam pipes carrying the particles are emptier than interstellar space, while the thousands of superconducting magnets that steer the particles around the ring operate at the staggeringly low temperature of minus 271.3 degrees Celsius, less than 2 degrees above absolute zero. To achieve this requires the world's biggest cryogenic facility, which uses 10,000 tons of liquid nitrogen and as much electricity as a large town to produce over 120 tons of superfluid liquid helium, which is then pumped intravenously through the LHC magnets.
Within a few days, this giant machine would start accelerating subatomic particles called protons to 99.999996% of the speed of light,
before firing them headlong into one another at four points around the ring, including inside LHCb, creating forms of matter not seen in large quantities since a trillionth of a second after the universe began. All of this, the years of design work and funding negotiations, the mobilization of a global community of thousands of physicists, the civil engineering, which included digging through an underground river that had been frozen using liquid nitrogen, not to mention manufacturing, testing, and installing millions of individual components, from 35-ton magnets to the tiniest silicon sensors, was to serve one cause: curiosity. Despite what some tabloids may try to tell you, for instance, the Daily Express never seemed to tire of suggesting that CERN is using the LHC for nefarious purposes, including opening a portal to another sinister dimension, perhaps that gateway to the Upside Down in Stranger Things was really CERN's fault, or, my all-time favourite, to summon God, the LHC exists only to answer fundamental questions about the most basic building blocks of our world and how our universe came into being. And there are some really big questions that we need answers to. Our current theory of what the world is made from down at the fundamental level is known as the Standard Model of Particle Physics, a deceptively boring name for one of humankind's greatest intellectual achievements.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?